Logan, you're the MC.
Okay, so first, just imagine what the intro music is going to sound like. Can anybody kind of do it? Sorry. Wow. Thanks for tuning in. This is the groundbreaking episode of season 3 for the Multicultural Middle Ages. I'm Logan Quigley. I'm one of the series producers,
and I'm here with the rest of the team.
Logan, Will, John, it's so great to see all of you. And thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in for this episode of the Multicultural Middle Ages. My name is Reed O'Mara. I'm a PhD candidate at Case Western Reserve University studying art history. My area of study is mostly Jewish illuminated manuscripts, usually from Northern Europe. But I also dabble in all manner of media. I have been with the podcast since its inception in 2021, but we are also joined today by Will Beatty, who, although has appeared on the podcast, has not been a part of a producer episode.
Hello, everyone. I'm Will Beatty. I am finishing up, hopefully, my PhD in medieval studies at the University of Notre Dame. So I was once very happily a colleague of Logan's. And I joined the team here about a year ago, and I've been having a great time producing some really excellent episodes. And of course, the team would not be complete without our great leader, John.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Correa Reyes. People call me John. And yes, I'm an assistant professor at Clemson University. Excited to be here in this platforming. Hard to believe that this is our third year running, okay? It's really started in 2021 when everyone felt isolated because of COVID. We came up with, as graduate students working in the Graduate Student Committee of the Medieval Academy of America, we came up with this crazy project and we took a leap of faith, I guess. And here we are 3 years later doing something that we really love. So it's only been rewarding, and I'm very much looking forward to our reflection in this episode.
I do think it would be a really good idea for us to just reiterate the goals of this podcast. Why did we start the Multicultural Middle Ages? What are our goals and objectives with it? John?
From its inception, we wanted to create a public-facing platform that showcased and celebrated the plurality of voices that make up medieval studies. For the longest time, women, our trans and queer colleagues, as well as medievalists of color, have felt unwelcome in their respective fields. This history of rejection and silencing impoverished medieval studies as a whole. Now, I'm not sitting here today saying that we have undone the structural and systemic legacies that help and benefit from the silencing of non-white, non-heteronormative voices. But we have found each other. We have started to create communities of support, communities of care, and I do see changes happening. Our Speculum Spotlight episode for April features the Speculum special issue in Race, Race Thinking, and Identity in the Global Middle Ages, edited by Cord Whitaker, Nairo Taño Gracia, and François Xavier Fauvel. This would have been unthinkable in the 90s or even the early 2000s. One of the biggest accomplishments of MMA, I believe, is to be able to document this exciting and much-needed turn in medieval studies. We are here, we will stay here, and we will take the fields that make up medieval studies in new critical directions. So I think that what's exciting and what I'm most grateful about this podcast is how it's always, from its very first moment, been a collaborative project, right? So this baby, while it was originally my idea, perhaps it would never have happened if I didn't have Logan and Reed to jump into this crazy idea with me and kind of hold me back when I was like imagining this grand thing, right? And it's not only coalesced very nicely into what the Multicultural Middle Ages podcast is now, but it's brought the four of us together as closer as colleagues, as friends, and that is perhaps my favorite part of it. Like, every time I have to work in this, like, it's great. It's fun. Like, I love showing up for these meetings and showing up for recording and these interviews because it's just so much fun to do.
I mean, I just want to respond here and go on the record that I have never held John back from his dreams when it comes to podcasting, despite what he might have just said. I do think that this project, you know, it was born of collaboration and it remains as such. And I think that's one of the most exciting and beautiful things about it is that we all have very different interests, come from different backgrounds, and then we get to interview and work with people who have similar interests in the Middle Ages, but also have very different interests in the Middle Ages and have different expertise. And just having all of those people come together on like under one banner, and we don't really have a space because we're a podcast, but you know, coming together under like one space is really nice.
I couldn't agree more. I feel like I learned so much from every episode that we get to edit and workshop and then ultimately listen to. So many of them are ideas that I hadn't encountered before. And I feel like they come to us and it's so cool to get to see the breadth of not only what research they're doing, but also how they're approaching it, how people think about ways to translate their research into a podcast medium, you know, because it's different from just what you would write up in an academic article. And people have some really creative ideas and also just great editing skills. I love seeing what comes through and what people bring to the table.
Yeah, it really is more of a creative medium than you would think.
And as the newcomer and the interloper here, I just want to totally agree with everything and say that it's been brilliant for me coming onto this project to be able to champion the voices of different graduates and share amazing research with the wider world.
Now, I want to look back a little bit at what we've done. What was your favorite episode that we've put out so far?
This is a tough one, but I'm going to cheat, so it's not a problem, right? And pick a couple. I love their very first episode hosted by Brian Keene and Larissa Gralmond. It really took me back to the start, to the medievalisms that made me fascinated and curious about medieval history and culture. From season two, I loved our conversation with Charlotte Eubanks on medieval Japanese Buddhisms. For me, it struck the perfect balance between educational and entertaining. What a storyteller. But there is one episode, perhaps, that I am extremely proud and grateful to have on the MMA platform. And that's our episode on medieval trans studies, hosted by Anna Klasowska, in conversation with Gabriel Bukowski, Micah Goodrich, Blake Gutt, and Clovis Meyer. The topic of being and identifying as queer came up in one of my classes, as it should. And among other resources, I pointed students to this MMA episode. I swear that less than 2 hours later, I already had a rather lengthy email from a student with comments, questions, and requests for more materials. He mentioned how his own experiences resonated with this episode's discussion and how he never thought of seeing someone like him doing this kind of work in a field that he was so curious about. It really brought home for me, right, the stakes of what we do by bridging the gap between the academy and the general public. Knowing that his experience was part of a longer history was extremely important for this student. And I think that was the moment when it really clicked to me that all this work we do is worth it, that it matters.
I refuse to follow that.
After you.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's been really interesting. We have been returning, I think, to a lot of our previous episodes because we did just launch an Instagram. If you don't follow us, we are Multicultural Middle Ages Pod on Instagram. And I've been posting all of our previous like episode flyers and posters and promotional materials. So I've been returning to these episodes that we created back in 2021 to the ones that we were posting just last year. And it's been quite a growth, I think. But I'm also really proud of all the things that we started off with. And we really did hit the ground running with episodes on curating global medievalisms and then medieval trans studies. And I'm really proud of that. I think, though, some of the highlights for me came in season two, especially once we started doing collaborations with Speculum. I really loved the episode by Francois Charmai, Trans Climates of the European Middle Ages, which Logan was actually featured on. I felt like that episode, similarly to what John has just said, I just felt like it did a really good job of showing this expanded view of what can be contained and can't be contained within the Middle Ages and how, you know, there are these histories of gender nonconforming seasons and times and things, and just that the gender binary really falls apart. And if we go back to the historical record, we can find these really fascinating histories. It feels wrong to say that I also really loved the episode on jewelry and people in the Byzantine Cemetery of Parapotamos Epiros because I'm on it, but I did really enjoy that episode. Talking to Yorgos Makris was an absolute delight, and one of my favorite things about that episode was the way that he described some of the pieces of jewelry found in this cemetery in Greece and the care with which he described them in this, you know, medium that doesn't really have a visual component unless you go look at our show notes. You know, I felt like that was such a really good exercise. It just was really wonderful, especially because pieces of jewelry, things that have been buried in the ground, things that are more closely related to archaeology than what is typically thought of as your traditional art history, you know, they often don't get this close looking, this kind of really careful respect that gives the craftspeople who made them and the people who wore them just so much more dignity. So that was really special for me. I was really happy to be a part of that.
Will, what comes to mind for you?
I think for me, a couple of episodes really stick in my mind. The first one is also from season two, the Radlonga 1990s, Nostalgia and Pop Medievalisms of the 90s and Y2K. And that was by Alice Fulmer, Olivia Bienvenu, and Erin A. Suller. And I really enjoyed that episode because popular medievalism is something which I always find fascinating. I'm deep in the world of RPGs, tabletop, fantasy gaming, more building than actually playing, although I'm trying to change that. And these things are all heavily, heavily influenced by medievalism. It's fascinating to see how the medieval world or modern interpretations of it or imaginings of it are used by different communities, appeal to different communities in different ways. What is it about them that resonates with them? How do they adapt and change them? What sticks out? I don't know. I just think that it's such a broad topic of conversation and there are so many different avenues you can take it. And it's fascinating to see what's happening in other spheres of medievalism. I think a second episode for me, and this might be a bit of a selfish one because, again, I am on this episode, but it's the recent Speculum Spotlight on the CERN giant, which was an interview with Tom Morecambe and Helen Gittos. And that was an incredible conversation. I really, really enjoyed speaking to them. The work that they're doing is absolutely fascinating. I think I enjoyed this episode so much because, well, two reasons. One is there's a slight personal connection for me to the giant and its story. And also, it's a reminder that even these enormous monuments, which have been in the landscape for centuries, cared for by generations and generations of people, which have essentially become incorporated into sort of the identity of an entire region, are absolute mysteries to us still. They throw up these questions, and we're still trying to understand what exactly they are, when they were created. The CERN giant is this enigmatic figure that has been standing there on the hillside for centuries, and we're still finding new ways to interpret him. Is this solution that Morecambe and Gittos have given us the final answer? We don't know yet, but it's certainly an enticing possibility.
And if you haven't seen the CERN giant, you definitely need to Google it. CERNE giant. It's definitely worth looking up. I think my favorite episode that comes to mind is Racialized Medievalisms and Rings of Power, the Rise of the Diverse Fantasy prequel. That was Misho Ishikawa, Kirsty Francis, and Chris Chisholm. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, big into the Legendarium. And so I really appreciated, as somebody who liked watching and criticizing Rings of Power, I really appreciated their take on it. I felt like listening to them, I really wanted to be there in the room with them, agreeing and disagreeing and contributing and asking questions. And I feel like for me, that's the mark of a good podcast episode, is when I feel like I'm part of the conversation, or rather, I'm desperately wishing that I could be part of the conversation. I think we would be remiss if we also didn't talk a little bit about our partnerships that we've had over seasons one and two. So someone who comes to mind is Anna O'Connell, who has been incredible to us and for us. We really appreciate it. All the music that you've heard in our episodes, Anna O'Connell is the person behind that. Reed, do you want to say anything more about Anna?
Oh, absolutely. So Anna O'Connell does our music. She finished up a DMA working in historical performance practice at Case Western Reserve University fairly recently, within the last year or so. And she is just an incredible musician. Obviously, you guys have heard her harp, but she's also an incredible singer. And I highly recommend that people check out her YouTube channel as well as her Instagram. I know that we, you know, have it at the end of every episode, but she really is doing incredible work. I don't think people often realize that if you're listening to medieval music, it's really not just music. It is somebody who has done so much work to read historical musical scores, then, you know, transcribe those maybe into contemporary notation, but then also has to have so much understanding about what kind of rhythm would you add to this? What kind of notes did they really mean? How are we pronouncing the Latin or whatever language it is? And so a lot of work really goes into historical performance practice. If you are interested in that kind of thing, we do have an episode on experiencing medieval music with the musical ensemble Trobar. But yeah, Anna's out there doing amazing things with medieval music, and we need to keep artists like her supported.
If you are trying to swim upstream and find her, look no further than going to our website and looking at the show notes, or I guess just scroll down wherever you're listening to this.
Exactly. And, you know, it is a nice connection. I think a lot of the times, you know, we think that even when you are listening to, say you're watching The Witcher on Netflix and you're thinking to yourself, oh, this is just music in the background. It's Anna. No, it's people. It literally is Anna, but it's also other people as well who do historical performance practice. So it not only helps us keep medieval musical traditions alive, but it also fuels the musical environments of our TV shows and video games and other media.
It is so cool that she did the music for The Witcher. I can't get over that.
I know. It's like my fun fact. It's not even about me.
So looking ahead, actually, what are we excited about? Themes, maybe more so than episodes, but themes to come in season 3.
Well, for me, I think looking at some of the submissions we've got in, one of the things that always fascinates me is the daily life of the everyday person in the Middle Ages. It's something which we can never fully access because, of course, often the ways of recording, whether it be through art or architecture or through writing, are restricted to the clergy, the elite, the educated, and so on. It looks like we've got quite a number of episodes that are really dealing with what life was like for the average person, whether that's through their relationship with the environment, with language, the legal systems, whether these were diverse or homogenous groups, a whole range of different approaches to that topic. And as someone that studied apocalyptic literature and the way that kind of interacts with the laity, the secular audiences, I'm really excited to hear how these episodes interrogate that idea.
This is so biased because I'm in art history, but I'm so excited for us to continue to have episodes with art historians. I think it's really cool when we have, you know, these episodes that are about visual media in this format. I think it can be really exciting, lead to new ways of thinking. And along those lines, in the second season, we had an episode on medieval Jewish women and intersectionality from Sarah Ifdecker. I really love her work, and I'm excited for the potential in this season to have another spotlight on non-Christian medieval cultures, be they Jewish, be they Islamic. I know that we have in the works a couple episodes related to Christian and Muslim relations in Spain, as well as some ties to Afghanistan. And so I'm very excited to see those episodes come out.
Okay. So for me, perhaps it's interestingly the episode I've been working on this week as we're recording this, and it's our April Speculum Spotlight on a themed issue, on a special themed issue on race, race thinking, and identity in the global Middle Ages, edited by Cord Whitaker, Nairo Taño Gracia, and François Xavier Fauvel. And I love that episode. And I think I don't need to talk a lot about it because I think that anyone clicking on the multicultural Middle Ages kind of is not going to be too surprised that we're talking about race and race thinking and identity in conjunction in this time period. But these conversations, this scholarship often finds roadblocks, right? It's kind of haunted by accusations of anachronism, that we are attaching modern categories of identity, those of race, to the medieval period. So I'm extremely excited for the work that all the three editors have put into this issue, and with wonderful contributions by Ty Catherine Matthews, Annegret Oemen, Angela Sang, Eduardo Ramos, Susan Cho, Christina Ilko, and Basil Arnold Price. I'm excited to read their work and look at how we continue to rethink about the longer histories of identity, identity formation, and why it matters to account for the medieval period in these histories as well, that they are not devoid of these structures and forms of social organization or social discrimination.
if you were looking at contributing an episode, what might your experience be like? What is the process of pitching an episode and then actually putting it together?
Well, once we've decided internally on a timeline for ourselves, we'll post out a call for submissions. They'll go through all our main sort of avenues of promotion. And once we've passed the submission deadline, we'll then deliberate and we'll decide on usually about a dozen episodes that we want to pursue. And we try to think holistically about a theme for the series, how well all these different episodes are going to gel together, that we're representing a range of disciplines, different cultural, geographical, religious backgrounds, and so on, and really trying to represent the Middle Ages, the medieval world, as broadly as we can. From there, we'll then obviously inform the successful applicants, and we will then start working with them. So we'll give them about a month, 2 months to produce the first draft of the episode. We'll provide support for that. We'll help with any recording difficulties they have. We'll help with training in case they're not that familiar with the various kinds of recording software that are available. And after we've received that initial draft, we'll then work with them to refine it, to make any necessary changes. We'll do a lot of the minor editing, right, to improve audio quality, getting rid of any clips, ums, ahs, that kind of thing. And we'll also add music. And usually that's a fairly smooth process. And from there, it's simply a matter of letting them know we think it's ready to go, and we'll let them know when we hope for it to be published.
What makes for a successful proposal in your eyes?
I think a successful application is one that clearly outlines what they envision for the episode. Are they trying to make something that is really immersive, involves a lot of music, sound effects, or do they have a vision of doing an interview? Do they have that structure in place? I think that just knowing what you want your episode to look like, even if you're not 100% confident on editing or even executing it, but if you know exactly what it is that you want to happen, I think having that in an application really does translate to making a successful episode. So seeing those applications that clearly have listened, know the podcasting format, have a vision for it, that's a success for me.
If I may add, I think that's something we also look at very carefully is we want to be convinced by the time we make it through to the end of the proposal that the topic or topics are going to be handled in a culturally responsible way. And that is something that we will definitely give priority to. We want to make sure that we are putting culturally responsible content out there It's content that really speaks to the mission of the podcast, who we are as a forum and what we want to be as well.
And we do a lot of different formats for episodes, so proposals really do look very varied when they come in. And we're really open-minded to what an episode might look like. But I think you said it really well, Reed. What we want is the feeling that the contributor has a clear idea for what they want the episode to look like. And that's something that gets us pretty excited because we want to help support that. And we really are here to platform somebody else's vision.
Just to underscore that, we've worked with people that have significant experience podcasting and are able to do the editing on their own, the sound mixing and everything, really. But we've also worked with people that have had zero experience in producing a podcast episode. And so don't let the technological gap dissuade you from applying is what we want to say. Having a vision is important, of course, and it always makes the episode more appealing, but you can have the vision without having the technical know-how to realize it, and we will help you get to that goal.
Absolutely.
And to be clear, when he says get to that goal and executing these things, you know, like in editing and post-production, he means him and Logan. They're wizards. Not that you're not, Will. I just know that Logan and John are incredible.
Oh, no, I agree. They are absolute production wizards.
We are all four wizards and great at what we do.
Different skill sets.
So as we transition into maybe the closing area of this episode, we can think about if there's anything that we want to hear or learn from people who listen.
I definitely would love to have more engagement with our listeners. I would love to hear what episodes you think are great and also, you know, what else you want to see. whether that's contributing something yourself or just what you want us to look for, because we do solicit episodes as well, in addition to just having the general call. And now that we have an Instagram, it's perhaps easier to just send us a little message saying, this episode was great. Have you considered, have you read the work of so-and-so? You should reach out to them. Yeah, I would love to hear what our listeners think of the podcast, where we can improve, and what you'd like to see maybe in season 4.
We do also have an anonymous feedback form on our website, multiculturalmiddleages.com, where you can submit ideas that you have, or also if you'd want to help out or get involved in any way, you can reach out to us through that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously, all our episodes, we hope, are educational and entertaining, but we also want you to go away from them with more questions. And if there are things you want to learn more about, then let us know, and we can see what we can do to find the scholars, to find the researchers that are working on that area, and we can share that research with you.
Now, what do you all have to plug? Will, do you want to start? You have another podcast.
I have another podcast. We're called Meeting in the Middle Ages. It's a part of the Medieval Institute of the University of Notre Dame. I work on it with my good friend and colleague, Ben Pekeri, and we interview students and scholars, and we talk to them about what they do and how they came to do it. We're basically trying to pull back the curtain a bit and look at the work that goes into the academic publications and articles that we see in journals like Speculum. And we have recently started collaborating with a couple of publishing houses, and we've been having the opportunity to interview some really amazing scholars. So please do come and check us out. We're available on all the major podcasting platforms. Once again, the name of the podcast is Meeting in the Middle Ages.
It's a great podcast. Reed, what did you want to plug?
I actually just started a collaboration with a good friend of mine who is a artist and metalsmith, Ariella Harevan. It's called Fuse Museum to Studio Connections, and it's meant to be a kind of community arts group that forges connections between art historians and working artists and the institutions that they work at. So, for example, because I'm a medievalist, several of our events have had quite a medieval theme. So we did a workshop where Ariella actually taught art historians in my department at Case Western how to do enameling and wet packing, as well as like actually how to fire their own enamel pieces. And then we've also done, you know, workshops laying out cathedral plans. So a lot of active learning for art historians. But then on the other side, we're also doing events like showing artists how to take advantage of research sources at the Cleveland Museum of Art.
If you're interested in learning more about Fuse or perhaps doing a collaboration, you can reach out to us at fuse.msc@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram also at fuse.msc.
That's so cool. Don, what about you?
Well, I think circles of influence are very important to identify and everything. And the four of us are wonderful. But I've also like to take this moment to reach out to any perhaps medievalist of color of any rank that might be out there feeling isolated. We have groups of support, right? We have a Medievalist of Color Forum, right? It's a Gmail listserv. So if you're feeling isolated in your institution, which happens to many of us, like do reach out. You'll find us easily on Google. And also I like to point everyone interested in pre-modern critical race theory to look up Race Before Race. They're doing the most amazing things these days. And not only in terms of scholarship, which is gold standard, but also in terms of building community in fields that are not necessarily the most welcoming in many instances. So,
and I just want to jump in and thank the Medieval Academy of America for really making this podcast possible. We are here because we met through the Medieval Academy of America, and we are really grateful to them for continuing to make it possible for us to have the website and keep these episodes coming. We could not do this without you.
We should also take this opportunity to thank Speculum, especially editor Kate Jansen. It's been truly a delight to work with her for all of these Speculum Spotlight episodes and realize a vision that allows us to do what we enjoy doing, translating scholarship for a more general audience. And they have been extremely gracious in allowing us to do that in the most engaging and very simple and smooth way, actually, I think. So thank you, Speculum.
thank you so much to our colleagues. Thank you to our collaborators. Thank you to our listeners. And especially, I do want to shout out you three as being incredible co-producers along this podcast ride. It's been really great. And I'm just so glad to be on a team with you.
Don't we just get to work with the coolest people? Our contributors are doing not only cutting edge work, but they so often turn out to be the most amazing persons as well. It's really a privilege to be this far along the front lines, getting to interact with them and talk about ideas and everything. It's truly a treat. It's always very rewarding to do anything for the podcast, I think.
Yeah, thank you to everyone that's downloaded, listened to the episodes, and thank you to the three of you. It's been an absolute joy to work on the podcast series with you, and I look forward to continuing to do so and working with you and getting some new, really incredible research out to the public.
Yay!
Don't you love that about doing these podcast things when you're like, I'm confident. Oh, I don't know what's happening anymore.
Logan, I'm trusting you'll edit this and make it cohere nicely.
Oh, you can just edit me out of it. Completely, I'm not in the episode. Just gaps where Reed was supposed to say, like, cut it out.
This has been an episode of the Multicultural Middle Ages, an anthology-style podcast series sponsored by the Medieval Academy of America. Season 3 was produced by Will Beatty, Jonathan Correa-Reyes, Reed O'Mara, and Logan Quigley, with music by Anna O'Connell. For more information on the MMA podcast, follow the links in the episode description and consider subscribing to keep up with new episodes.